That was Straight No Chaser, famous jazz standard, recorded, believe it or not, 54 years ago, and featuring five jazz greats: Miles Davis on trumpet, John Coltrane on tenor sax, Cannonball Adderley on alto sax, Red Garland on piano, and Paul Chambers on bass. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. And it's Friday, November the 30th, the end to a most interesting week. How about that? How are you doing out there? I hope you're doing all right. Well, you know, I know I thought I would have had enough of the Hillary Clinton, I had vented enough, but no. She decided to do it again yesterday. She must know how to irritate me. Hillary Clinton, of course, commandeered attention, as is usually the case when she makes an announcement, and yesterday was no exception. She decided that she would upstage the president one more time, cast the shadow of the television lights, the warm glow of the television lights on herself as she prepares to make her exit, and there's a reason. And so she decides to use the occasion to announce to the world that she, that is to say the United States, because they're one and the same, will be embarking on this ambitious plan to stamp out AIDS in about 5 years if, you know, people cooperate and get it done right. Small thing, but let me just read to you how the Associated Press reported this story. To achieve an AIDS-free generation, oh, by the way, the headline is Clinton Reveals Roadmap to End AIDS Worldwide. Wow. To achieve an AIDS-free generation, the Obama administration has announced an ambitious roadmap to slash the global spread of the disease, which infected 2.5 million people worldwide last year, despite a decade-long decline in new infection rates. The administration said Thursday that treating people sooner and more rapid expansion of other proven tools could help even the hardest hit countries begin turning the tide of the epidemic over the next 3 to 5 years. An AIDS-free generation is not just a rallying cry, it is a goal that is within our reach, Secretary of State Hillary Rodham Clinton said in the report. Make no mistake about it, HIV may well be with us into the future, but the disease that it causes need not be, she said at the State Department Thursday. Clinton had ordered the blueprint for what the U.S. and other countries should do to slow the spread of AIDS. And here comes a sentence I like. President Barack Obama echoed Clinton's response. We have something, it's kind of like a role reversal here. President Obama echoed Clinton's response, Clinton's promise. Now, I'll just stop there. I don't need to read the rest of the story because that is really where I get a very important hint. Number one, nowhere in the story does it communicate that this program called the President's Emergency Plan for AIDS Relief actually was started by George Bush. Okay. They don't mention that. And certainly Mrs. Clinton never gives a nod to President George Bush. That's George W., not H.W., but George W. Bush, who started this program. And so, yet again, we have Hillary Clinton using an opportunity, and it's a viable issue, and it's good that the United States is trying to contribute to the, you know, education around the world, to helping and stamping out this disease. But this program, of course, is not at all without its critics. But yesterday you would get the impression that Hillary Rodham Clinton has come up all by herself with a brand new idea and gave birth to this brand new idea herself. Yet another good thing that she has done all by herself. This thing has been in existence since George Bush was in office. He started it with a $15 billion endowment. Now, the aims and objectives of the program are to help, especially in developing countries, to lessen the incidence of the disease. And yet, there are some pretty serious questions about how this program operates worldwide. Lots and lots of criticism about the program. In fact, people in the health field say that it is way too politicized, and it should concern Hillary Clinton that the program is itself criticized for placing undue burdens on women. But that's not important to Hillary. It's important to Hillary that people understand and identify her personally with this effort to help poor developing countries with the onerous task of dealing with HIV and AIDS. Hillary has done it again. And AP has the president echoing her promise. It says right there, President Barack Obama echoed Clinton's promise. Now, a prudent person in the cabinet of a president would recognize the importance of giving credit to the boss. If you're going to do something that is credit-worthy, you acknowledge that you are an emissary, an ambassador for the boss. The boss gets credit. But the Associated Press, and you know, they're pretty good at reporting, President Barack Obama echoed Clinton's promise. So as she leaves the administration, and there are reasons, as she leaves the administration, she is racking up and very busy at it, making sure that she racks up enough ammunition, political ammunition, to serve her well on two fronts. The same way it has served the co-president, the way she served, which is Bill Clinton. She was co-president of the United States with Bill Clinton. He did the same thing. And in fact, he is a tutor both to Hillary Clinton, and I submit to you today, the troubling signs are that our current president is a little too studious of the Bill and Hillary Clinton political manual. He's showing signs that he's a very good student, and it is very disturbing. This plan, this presidential plan, administered through the State Department, of all things, because it is political. Yes, it is a health-related plan, but it is administered through the State Department, which oversees all foreign programs, I suppose, like this one, which have to do with a relationship with other governments. So, but here is what Clinton actually said. It's very significant, she said. Clinton warned, listen to the language. Clinton warned Thursday that the U.S. must continue doing its share. Quote, in the fight against HIV/AIDS, failure to live up to our commitments isn't just disappointing, it's deadly. Now, what is she saying? What is she saying? This is a public stick-up. What she is doing right here is sending, in a brazen manner, a warning and a threat to Barack Obama. You better live up to your commitment. I mean, this is her public conduct. This is the Secretary of State literally talking indirectly but directly to her boss. In the fight against HIV/AIDS, failure to live up to our commitments isn't just disappointing, it's deadly. So she's sending a signal already that there is an expectation that the budget would be cut for this. And if so, she's sending a warning early, even to her boss. Do not mess around with this, because this is a project important to me. So don't fail to live up to the funding for this project. Now, that's not the way you conduct yourself. Not as a subordinate to a president. You don't get out there and start, you know, like a gunslinger, but then you're married to a gunslinger. These are the gunslingers of politics, Hillary and Bill. This is the way they behave. But why would she behave this way? She would behave this way because the healthcare industry is very important to the Clintons. Very, very important to the Clintons. I'll read you something about, in the way of criticism of this program, the President's Emergency Plan for AIDS Relief, which is known in its abbreviated form as PEPFAR. For the first 2 years of the program, Bush blocked the procurement of most low-cost, generic, fixed-dose combinations of antiretrovirals in favor of brand-name multi-drug regimens that cost twice as much, thus lining the pockets of U.S. pharmaceutical companies instead of saving lives. This comes from a critic of the program. Even though a generic antiretroviral was approved by the FDA in 2005 and made available for purchase through PEPFAR, only 27% of the antiretrovirals purchased by PEPFAR in the 2006 fiscal year were generic. In addition, the U.S. has attempted to block access to quality generics on the global market. Now, are you beginning to make sense of this? This is a program ostensibly to help with the contagion of AIDS in poor countries, to get help to people who have it and have HIV as well. $15 billion initially was allotted for this program under Bush. But even at that time, we see that critics were beginning to make a connection between this program, which is global in scope, and the pharmaceutical companies. And the government literally moving aggressively to block the producers of generic, which is lower costing drugs, in order to pay the higher rate to the pharmaceutical companies. So this program, with good intentions, was nonetheless a direct subsidy to the pharmaceutical companies. This is what it's saying. Here we go again. PEPFAR requires that 33% of all prevention monies and two-thirds of sexual transmission funds be spent on abstinence and fidelity programs. Now, this is a liberated woman. This is a feminist. But the program that she is threatening about now comes with a really interesting set of requirements. You are required, the country receiving aid under PEPFAR must enforce this condition that they must spend at least one-third of the money on abstinence programs and fidelity programs. Now, if somebody in the United States tells you, in order to receive funds, in order to receive help, in order to receive medication, you have to swear, you have to sign a form saying that you approve of abstinence and you will follow a life of abstinence and fidelity. I know it sounds bizarre, but this is actually required. Many of these programs are administered by faith-based organizations, typically evangelical Christian groups that promote abstinence before marriage and being faithful and downplay the use of condoms. That's interesting, isn't it? You're talking about you want to help the world, but they have to agree to these terms. That's not what she said. That is not what she represents. You know, she doesn't say this is what the program does. And beyond that, they say this was a criticism from the days of Bush. It says, this combined with the Bush administration's go-it-alone approach and refusal to integrate with national AIDS prevention programs already in place has essentially destroyed years of AIDS prevention work in several countries. Nowhere is this more apparent than in Uganda, where a highly successful AIDS prevention program that stressed the use of condoms had been in place since 1990. After Uganda accepted PEPFAR funding in 2003, this goes back, but it remains the same, faith-based organizations undermined the country's condom program. As a result, millions of condoms sat in warehouses because they were not wanted. According to the Director General of the Uganda AIDS Commission, since it adopted the program, the rate of new HIV infections almost doubled, from 70,000 to 130,000 cases. Now, how about that? So we have a case here in which this program, It doesn't require all of this stuff here. It can't, it wouldn't dare suggest that. But in these developing countries, these are the stringent requirements in order to receive these funds, which A, subsidize the pharmaceutical companies, block the use of generic drugs, which are fully approved by the World Health Organization. The United States actually refuses to allow generic drugs that are far, far less expensive to be used. And B, the program fits neatly into a global program of proselytizing. This business of the feeding into the evangelical, Christian evangelical movements that demand morality in these different cultures that the program exists. Now, a feminist stood before the world yesterday and declared, you know, this and pointed a gun at the political gun at Barack Obama's head and says, hey, don't you interfere with this. Don't you interfere with this program, because we have reason to make sure that the funding stays at current levels, if not even improve in terms of the allocation to this program. The Clintons have a very, very keen interest in the pharmaceutical companies. And the whole intention here, while Hillary Clinton looks like the great savior, her task is to not only look like she is the savior, and she's getting credit for this. She's a leader because, you know, she's a woman. Hear her roar. She is a powerful woman. Don't mess with me. I know what I'm doing. I am a leader. I am the president that you were too stupid to elect. The Associated Press has Barack Obama echoing her promise. I mean, that's what they wrote. And she has leveled the gun at Barack Obama's head. Whatever your fiscal crisis is, you make sure that this money is not messed with, because I have to deliver, and I will deliver to the pharmaceutical companies what they need. See how it works? That's how it works. That's politics Clinton style. That's politics Clinton style. As she prepares to make her exit, Hillary Clinton is prone to doing all these things. And she's gotten away with a heck of a lot. Most recently, we saw what a marvelous job she did in brokering the peace accord in Israel, between Israel and Hamas. She kind of wanted to take singular credit for that until it started unraveling, and then it said, hey, you know, that's Morsi. That's that Egyptian guy. Don't look at me. He messed it up. But now she has her eyes set next on Morocco to do another miracle there. I want to read a piece about that was posted on the Huffington Post, as a matter of fact. And it concerns the individual health insurance mandates and greater personal debt. And this is why the health care plan that Hillary Clinton devised almost by herself, going all the way back when she was co-president of the United States, and got Bill to pretty much give her kind of cabinet-level position de facto, although she was not elected to any office at all. He appointed her to head up this committee to devise a health plan. as if she knows anything about it. But they know, what they need to know about healthcare is that they need to make a living off of this thing. They need to make a lot of money off of this. So they came up with this plan, which shamefully, and we have to do something to impress upon Barack Obama that it is not the gem that he thinks it is, and he should not be selling it to the American people. Roseanne DeMauro wrote this article, and it says, behind the escalating debate on the healthcare, on healthcare between health senators, she was senator then, Senators Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama on individual mandate, she's for it, he's against it, is a critical policy battle that not only cuts across healthcare reform, but also the neoliberal privatization dreams, the home mortgage crisis, and the recession that is no longer looming, it is here. Sound far-fetched? Take a closer look, starting with the millions of Americans staring at the loss of their homes due to the subprime loan debacle. It's not a loan or mortgage crisis for those families. It's a debt crisis being forced upon them by the banks, hedge funds, and insurers who are desperate to shift their own mammoth debt to someone else. Stay with me. You'll see where this is going. She's writing this in 2008. This is when both Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama were senators, and they were shaping up this healthcare battle. Banking or other financial institutions, insurance, and real estate, which make up the finance sector, now account for about half of U.S. corporate profits. And they are in trouble with more than $2.5 trillion in outstanding consumer debt, $800 billion of that in credit card debt, and another $10.1 trillion in domestic mortgage debt. Being thrifty won't solve that problem. The financial planners have identified two lucrative pots of money: trading carbon credits for industries and employers that want to brand themselves as green while continuing to pollute, and making a killing in healthcare. Currently 16% of our national economic pie and rapidly growing. The banks are already into healthcare in a big way, serving as a repository for health savings accounts and other tax credit schemes so beloved by the Bush administration and the Republican presidential candidates. But the financiers would like more. Enter the neoliberal think tanks and policy wonks and plans they hawk to expand the reach of the market, especially the financial market, in healthcare. Central to that approach is shotgun insurance, forcing everyone not currently covered to buy health insurance policies. Compelling people to buy insurance, however, is not the easiest sell. Big insurers and HMOs have a well-deserved bad reputation for heartless denials of care. That's how they make money. And it is pricey. Premiums the past decade have gone up 87%, not to mention the ever-climbing bills for deductibles, copays, and a host of other transaction fees. The finance industry is over the moon with this scheme. So the big carrot here is, as let me read it. The carrot is public subsidies for those least able to pay. But that approach has noticeable flaws, best evidenced in Massachusetts, the individual mandate pioneer and model. As a result of the state's failure to control premium hikes, costs of the subsidized program are projected to double over the next 3 years to $1.35 billion, the Boston Globe reported. And Massachusetts is debating whether to slash the health care services offered through the subsidized plans or cut payments to doctors and hospitals. So the banks are the big winners in this scheme. The article goes on. To shroud the colossal problems and the real story of who actually makes out like bandits under this scheme, the proponents, including some liberal policy experts, have dressed it up with poll-tested rhetoric that mandatory insurance is, quote, universal health care, unquote. But having insurance is not the same as being able to use it. You're only being mandated to purchase the premiums. They're not mandating the insurance companies to make sure that you get the care that you need, nor does having insurance protect you from financial ruin.
It's a 2-in-1 sweeper. A great clean doesn't have to take long.
So this is what the deal is. Everywhere you go with these Clintons, you see the connection with money. It's always about money and power. Always. Always. Straight No Chaser. Straight No Chaser. This is Lee Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead on PRN.FM. Give me a call at 888-874-4888. Let me know what your thoughts are about anything today. The stories of the week that you have noticed and want to make a comment on or offer an analysis of, we're open to hearing your point of view. But this is how, you know, this is what bothers me about Barack Obama. Barack Obama, and I had hesitated to say this because, you know, you give people the benefit of the doubt, but there's no doubt that Barack Obama is an acolyte of the Clintons. There's no doubt about that. There's no doubt that he is their surrogate. And there is no doubt that although Bill Clinton is no longer in office, he still is in office via the Obama administration. And Hillary Clinton's job for the 4 years that she has been there is to make sure that whatever connections are necessary to be made, whatever arrangements that are necessary to be made, so that they would have a very lucrative afterlife. That's the whole thing about politics these days. This isn't so much about being in office. It's about making office pay. Bill Clinton rakes in millions of dollars a year just in speaking fees alone. Just in speaking fees alone. So it pays to have that as your resume that you were president of the United States. And you can rake in the dollars. They'd live very nicely. So her job, apart from, of course, shoring up her own currency for an eventual political life of her own, perhaps running for president, who knows? It may not pay nearly as much as some other things. And one day we'll just devote the program to a case study. One program is not enough to decipher Hillary Rodham Clinton, who is a history-making first lady, but not in the way you think. This is the first lady who has come under investigation, married to a president who was impeached. So we have a very interesting dynamic going on here, and Barack Obama is completely surrounded by the Clintonites. Completely surrounded by them. And so he has not shown any inclination to break free of the Clinton method of doing business. So we have to watch him very, very closely. Your calls, 888-874-4888. Okay, I talk about these things and I read a lot. And when you read some of the stories going back a few years, the story I read you was going back to, I believe it was 2008. Oh, no, 2004, when they were senators together. But all the way back then, Hillary is thinking, the Clintons are thinking, how do we situate ourselves? And that is the nature of politics, and that is what makes the Democrats and the Republicans one and the same thing. They differ only in the degree to which they are larcenous. Some are more larcenous, others a little less larcenous, but they're larcenous, generally speaking. And the exercise that we go through every 4 years, thinking, well, we are investing in a new way of doing things. We are investing in security. We are investing in a sensible and responsible government. No, that is not what's happening. What we're doing is we are putting in place people who have agendas that ultimately will cost the people, the same people who are voting, it will cost them something to keep these folks in office. Because once there, their only agenda is staying there and making cutting deals that would satisfy their own personal revenue streams when they're done or even while they're there. Mike from Michigan, you're on. Thank you for calling.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Yes, I live in St. Clair Shores, Michigan. And what my city is doing right now is buying houses that the people lost for taxes, and they're flipping them for a profit. I was just wondering what you feel about it. I just think it's just so unspiritual.
Well, it's government, and what could happen and what should happen. And I see, Occupy movement had tried doing something like that, which is to organize to buy bad debts and to retire people's debts. There's a lot of money, even in adversity, in some cases, because it is an adverse situation and people are on the ropes. There's a whole sector that functions and thrives on other people's misery. This is what's going to happen in the housing market. Housing, even when it's bad, it's good. It's like the oil business. So you can expect that. City governments will do that. They will reclaim properties that have fallen into foreclosure, and they will revert to the city, and they will auction them off to the highest bidder. That is normal for the cities to do.
Yes, and one more thing about the Clintons. Didn't the daughter marry somebody that owns a hedge fund? I'm not sure about that, but...
Well, he actually went to jail. The father you're talking about, the father went to jail for it, which is why he qualified for friendship of the Clintons. It seems to be a qualification. You get to be friends with the Clintons if you have either been indicted or you've served time in jail. But, it requires people to say to themselves, what's behind these moves? A perfectly innocent thing like AIDS has all of these nasty pieces wrapped up in it, you know, pharmaceuticals, companies making money, and you have the Christian movement involved in it, and everybody gets a piece, and it's all in these developing countries. And these are the conditions, you know, these are the conditions they have to live up to, except that it is $15 billion tax dollars. People are scrambling. if you're going to give money, and this is a worthy cause, I'm sure, to support a world effort like this, but why not just do it on the up and up? Why does it have to get involved in all these other constituencies that want a piece of the pie? But this is how they make these connections, so that whether even if they're still in office or they leave office, they collect money. Thanks, Mike, for calling. This is how they do it. Watch Hillary Clinton for the it's now going to be a month, another month. Watch what happens before she leaves. Rick from Ohio, thank you. You're on the air.
Hello, yeah. Hey, this is not what you're talking about, but, you know, I run across a lot of people who want to protect America from the influx of immigrants and all this. And I think the... But yet they want to deregulate the banks even further at the same time. And my thing is, deregulated banking actually led to them being here. Because and the outcome, the manifestation of that is now there's approximately 50,000 Latinos coming of age in America every 30 days, which doesn't bother me in the least. And then they'll most likely vote Democratic. But what led up to them being here, their parents being here, is the, I don't know if you've read, the Confessions of an Economic Hitman?
Have you heard of that? I've not read that.
Yeah, this guy went all over the world, or in the Americas, in other places, and worked for the World Bank and the IMF. And they loaned it up to like 20.4% and all of this. And then the recession hit and they were unable to meet their debt obligations. And so they forced these nations to forego essentially structural adjustment.
That's an old IMF requirement. It has been going on for years. Structural adjustments, which means cut your budgets and make people suffer.
Right. And sell off the commons. Essentially, sell off your public works and all of this. Just a segue. Last year, the Philippines suffered the world's first trash slide. People died actually from there's so much trash in the Philippines, and it turns out that it was actually public land that then was transferred over to private ownership. And so it only leads to further breaking down of the ecology, our environment, you know, societies, et cetera. And so it is very difficult to even talk to progressives about that. I get in arguments, people yelling at me, stop looking at the big picture. Stop looking at the big picture, you know. And so I just wanted to say that. I just wanted to say, there's 50,000 people coming of age, 18, and then that being the aftermath of a deregulated banking system. That's it.
Well, thank you. It's an interesting correlation. And I did note a report this very week that the birth rate in the United States is the lowest it has been since the Great Depression. And that is as a result of the recession. People simply cannot afford to have children. They can't afford them. So the birth rate has gone down. That's a significant development because it swept Europe already. In fact, in Europe, various governments actually are paying people, they're subsidizing people, if they could only encourage them to have more children. That is not the case in Israel or Palestine, where, of course, they have to have children to replace the number of children in the case of Palestine that die as a result of warfare. And in a situation which outnumbering your enemy is also a strategy. So both on the Israeli side and on the Palestinian side, there is a prolific reproduction. But in the United States, it is clear that people are having a harder time of it, and the low birth rate reflects state of affairs with the economy. With respect to garbage, this is an interesting thing. Do you know that there are many countries that are so poor now that they actually depend, they receive the garbage from the United States as a part of their revenue? Haiti was very popular for many, many years. It probably still is. I haven't checked that the garbage from New York would end up in Haiti. They didn't care what ecological disasters it wreaked in Haiti, as long as it got out of New York. So barges of garbage would float out of New York City into Haiti. And once it reaches Haiti, of course, it would be picked through for anything useful. And it was where people lived. It's a horrible story about what happens to U.S. refuse and garbage. Many countries, especially in the developing world, end up receiving garbage and trash, and often very toxic garbage, as part of a way of generating revenue. But the IMF, for a long time, and this has been a major criticism of it, it first makes these loans to governments available, and the governments under distress, of course, especially in the developing world, quickly take advantage of these loans. And, of course, it becomes an onerous task to pay them back because, for one thing, the rate of inflation in these countries is so high that by the time they get around to making payments, the dollar equivalent is in the United States to their currency is so lopsided. And then the IMF moves in and says, well, wait a minute now, you have to repay the loan. So what you're going to have to do, it now becomes literally involved in the governmental affairs of these countries by requiring them to make certain cuts. And they even tell them where to make the cuts. So you have that cycle going on. There was a period in which some countries had persuaded the IMF to forgive the debts, but the IMF continues the practice of structural reforms, as they call it. Other people call it, an onerous demand to cut costs. Well, we've come to the end of our program, I see. I hope we join each other again on Monday. Reach me at leadstories, L-E-I-D, stories, @gmail.com. And let's continue the conversation. Coming up next, Richard Martin and Wake Up Call. Thank you. Have a good weekend.